Hello, welcome to New Zealand Vegan Podcast, episode 126. I'm your host, Elizabeth Collins, and haven't been able to get some things off my chest that have been eating away at me, and you know, the podcast is the best place for me to do that, so thank you for allowing me to send this out into the airwaves. There's just mostly some things that have been going on the internet, of course, but also some things that have happened. First of all, I just want to say myself and Jeff Lyons and Bubs Peters have done a few events over the summer, and it's been so fantastic. We love doing it. We did Jam on Toast, and that's one of the events I want to talk about today. In fact, a lot of the stuff I'm talking about is stuff that's happened offline, so that's good. So it's mostly about different situations. Yeah, this is actually, now that I come to think of it, this podcast is mostly about different situations that I encountered at the street stall, like one-on-one interactions with people, and how, you know, how we, it was a bunch of us, handled them, and you know, the sort of things that you can expect to encounter, and the surprising results. They're so different from online. It is so different. I just really wish that people would just get out in the community, get off the internet. The internet is so deceiving. It's so skewed. There are trolls on the internet. You don't get trolled out in the street. I suppose you could call someone walking past, like a teenager saying meat or something like that. It's not the same though. It is not the same as being trolled on the internet. And also, people behave differently, and I'm going to give a really good example of that soon. It's just liberating, because all of this negative, defeatist, negative attitudes I see from people about animal use is never going to end, and people are never going to give up, and what about all the ignorant people? I guarantee you, they've never actually done community-based vegan education. Now, it's different. Like I've said so many times, everything is important. Talking to people in your family, talking to people at work, yeah, it's valuable. Running into people at the supermarket, all of that is amazing and fantastic. But there is a certain type of, for want of a better word, formality about when you set up an advocacy booth or stall or tent or something like that, where it is clear that you are there to advocate. There is no surprises. And if you're an abolitionist, it's very clear what you're advocating for. There is no subterfuge and no fuzziness and no compromise and no deceit. So there's no hidden agenda. And so it's a different environment. Like if you're at work and somebody has just got their head full of what they're trying to do that day, and they're just hungry and they want to have lunch, and then they talk about veganism a little bit, yeah, you might have a really productive conversation and it's valuable and you should always do it. But it's not really, they're not really going to work that day thinking, I'm going to talk about veganism, I'm going to examine animal use and my part in it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want to discount any of that, but all I'm saying is when they walk past you on the street, and there you are, and there's this situation in which there's this opportunity for both of you to step into this realm of debate and discussion and advocacy. This has been going on for centuries in human history. People are used to people advocating. They're used to people on the street advocating. It's its own thing, It is an incredible experience, I'm telling you. And this is, you know, these grassroots things did change the world. I watched a documentary on abortion when the women's rights movement, this is like back in the 40s, and then a bit later, when there was all these illegal abortions. It was in the United States, and this terrible, I mean, look, the situation in the States is drastically dire and terrible, and all over the world in that regard. But in this particular documentary, the women who were trying to advocate for safe healthcare for women stepped out into the street with pamphlets. This was one woman, and she started she lit a fire, and a movement happened, and it really did. And I'll post a link to the documentary, because it's on archive.org. And you know, that's not the first time that that's happened. I mean, you know, the abolitionists against slavery, they had put out publications, which is again, that is again written, but publications are great, but they also did events and they did gatherings. And, you know, and the difference between them is they were actually in danger of being hurt and things like that. I've never been felt unsafe at my stress hall, except for just feeling unsafe as a woman in general. If some drunken guy comes up to you or whatever, that can happen to you anywhere. Actually, with a street stall, you're more visible and there are people around, and you know, it's quite a safe environment. I mean, in my country, I mean, I can only speak from my experience and stuff like that. It might be different for other people, but I think a lot of people, it can be a safe environment to do this. And yeah, it's just so different. Okay, so the first event I'm going to talk about is we did this thing called Jam on Toast. It's a little event which is at the Greyland Community Centre in Auckland. And the first time me and Bubs did it, it was a bit of a wash because it was on, I think, a Saturday. I can't remember. It was in November 2013. And there was nobody showed up. It was this very dead event. Unfortunately, they didn't advertise it well or whatever happened. And it was like a non-event, really. But we were put out on the street. Luckily, we were put out the front of the community center. So we got regular foot traffic. So we, because all the rest of it was in the back, and you actually had to go into the back of the community center and walk out to the playground area, and you had to sort of go there. Whereas we were getting people just walking along the street, just like in Aotea. Not a heck of a lot of people walking along the street in Greyland compared to Queen Street, but it was not that bad, but it was a very quiet day. And but this time, they did it on the same day as the farmers market. Every Sunday at Greyland Community Centre, there's a market. They sell fresh vegetables, and they sell animal products, and they sell it's all mostly food. I mean, I don't think there's any non-food sold there. It's a farmers market. It's fresh vegetables and fruit. You know, organic and spray-free. Unfortunately, nothing veganic that I know of. And then there's like preserves, and then there's like sausages, and they cook it up. And then there's like a pizza guy, and there's pastries, and then there's salmon. This guy is selling all this salmon, you know, the fish. So what happened is the person who organized Jam on Toast, we just said, I got there first, and I was like, where do you want us to go? And she said, go in the front, again on the street, at the entrance to the community center, but actually out on the footpath, and which is right amongst the market stalls. Actually, it was literally next to the sausage, okay, and they were cooking meat there. And on the other side of us was the salmon guy, okay. To me, there's no difference morally between next to somebody who's selling milkshakes. It's just that the smell of the cooking of the meat is very, very horrible. So that's not pleasant. But, you know, we that's where she said for us to go, so that's where we went. Now, it turns out for some reason, we were again excluded a little bit from the main Jam on Toast, which was this, it's mostly like a kids thing, and they have face painting. It's like a mini, mini festival, and they had, I don't know, they had all kinds of stuff. We didn't get to see it because it was in the back. So for some reason, she put us in the front again, and I don't know what to make of that, except that I was grateful to her because it turns out we got heaps of action compared to what we would have. But it was very confusing for the market people because they suddenly thought we were going to be part of the market, and they're there every single week. And then at the end, the person who organized the markets was like, okay, you know, sorry, I didn't know you were part of the market. And I said, we're not. We're part of Jam on Toast. Talk to, you know, so-and-so. We just got put here. It was very confusing for everyone. But anyway, we made the most of it. Trust me. And it turns out that so we had heaps of conversations, as usual. Fantastic. Really interesting. You know, quality, intense, you know, profound conversations about veganism and waking people up to the moral personhood of other animals right after they might have bought their sausages from the sausage guy, who knows. So then at the end of the day, we started speaking with a farmer, and she was an animal farmer, chickens, and her opening to us was that she was angry at vegans because they posted they constantly post all these lies. She said they post a video or a photo of an animal being killed in a way in which we don't kill them here in New Zealand. Remember, this is somebody who kills animals for a living. And she said it's really objectionable because we don't do that here. So then everybody goes on there and says, this is terrible, this is terrible. And she's like, that's not what we do here. And I said, well, first of all, that won't be us doing that because we don't focus on treatment. We don't focus on how the animal is killed. That is not our issue. Our issue is animal use. And we tried to bring her around to what we're about. I mean, and I said, you know, and we actually don't support the welfarist advocates. We're not nothing to do with SAFE, for example. We said we don't support SAFE, and we actually oppose their advocacy, and we're critical of it publicly. And she was very surprised with that. She said, oh, I thought you would be involved with them. I said, no, absolutely not. We're abolitionists. We're not SAFE. And I said, that is the kind of dishonest activity that, you know, a lot of the welfare movement will get in just to elicit a reaction and things like that. Although maybe it's a genuine mistake of someone, who knows. I don't know which exact postings she's talking about. It's all on Facebook. But I said, listen, we don't care about that. And so then, of course, she's talking about how we treat the animals kindly. We treat our animals kindly. We are good to our animals. And we, you know, and of course, you know, then we had a discussion about that, and it went back and forth and back and forth, and we had this discussion with her for about half an hour, and that's not the first time I've talked to, you know, people who exploit animals as a job, because it's no different than talking to somebody else who, you know, there is a psychological difference in that this person, you know, can do it. But then we talked about the dogs and, you know, well, what happens to, because she loves dogs, you know, they're not commodities to her as much as chickens are, although they are still commodities. When a dog can't work at her farm, the dog gets shot. But I said, so she says, I have no problem killing a chicken. I do it all the time. And then I said, what about the dogs? Oh, no, I can't shoot the dogs, you know. And so it was, we just had this really, really long conversation. It went back and forth. She kept talking about treatment, and I just kept saying, we don't care about that. And the interesting thing that I want to share with you is that, first of all, you can have, you know, if you're really consistent, and if you are an experienced advocate, I guess you could say, you can have conversations with anyone about this, and it can be productive, and you can make your point, and you cannot compromise, and you cannot back down. You don't have to insult them, and you don't have to, you know, it can be a profound experience to talk to anybody about this, if you know what you're doing, and if you're focusing on abolition, and you're clear, and you're educated about the abolitionist approach, and you avoid all the pitfalls that they throw at you. I mean, at one point she talked about plants. I'm not kidding. I mean, everybody talks about plants. But you know what? That to me is an indication that you are getting them thinking. They are scrambling. They're like, I don't want to use a violent analogy, but in a way, emotionally or intellectually, they're backed into a corner, and they're feeling, you know, the truth closing in, you know. And like I've always said, myself included, people resist that because truth hurts. The truth hurts. That is a cliche. Cliches are cliches for a reason. Okay, that's true. And so they do. They wiggle around, and you'll be told the plant thing a million times by so many people. Trust me. And on all kinds of other things, right? So she mentioned, and then she said, well, and then the latest thing she said was, well, plants, you know, plants themselves need animal products. They need blood and bone to thrive. So even plants themselves aren't vegan. Do you know what I mean? And I said, you know, they don't need it. There's veganic farming. And she'd never heard of it. She said, organic? No, organic uses blood and bone. I said, no, veganic. And she said, oh, well, I've never heard of that. And I said, well, now you have. So we talked about that. And I just want to point out that, like, I was thinking to myself, you know, while we were talking, I was like, we've been talking for half an hour. We're smiling. We are interacting with each other in a civilized way. And I thought to myself, if I was online with this woman and we were interacting online, we would be at it hammer and tongs, because she was saying we treat our animals nicely, we're good to our animals, we're kind to our animals, we love our animals, right? That would have been her comment as a farmer, as somebody who systematically exploits and slaughters those animals and mutilates them and does whatever else has to be done to them in order to make them productive commodities, because it's her business. And then my comment would have been, there's no such thing. And I can just see it turning into a very hostile conversation online. Can't you? But we said the same things face to face, okay? And because there was body language, because we are social creatures, because we are not inherently violent the way, you know, a lot of people think we are. We have a propensity for it, but that's cultural, and that's just, you know, that's just goes back, and that's just, you know, look at what we celebrate in movies and things like that. But when you're face to face with someone, unless you're face to face with somebody who's either been abused their whole life and only knows about violence, you know, they just literally, that's all they know from when they were a baby, or if you're dealing with somebody who's basically psychopathic and has zero empathy or concern for another person's well-being and physical well-being, mental well-being, then it's very rare you're going to, you know, people do get emotional and they come to blows and things like that, but it doesn't happen as often as you might think, okay? For one thing, I'm not a violent person, and I'm certainly not going to come to blows with someone, but what I'm trying to say to you is that the conversation online would have been, I imagine, I would have been what I always am, which is factual and stuff, but I do sometimes get emotional because it's an emotional subject. I mean, we're talking about absolute horror. I mean, I'm the same way when it comes to advocating for children, when it comes to advocating against women's rights. I have an outrage. You know, I have a righteous indignation. I mean, don't we all? I mean, it's like, that's very real. You know, go with that, embrace that. Just don't become insulting, or don't let them push you into a place where you lash out unproductively and things like that. So yeah, I just thought this is great. I'm really glad I met this woman in person rather than online. Okay. And it turns out that, because I go to that market every week. It's my market, coincidentally enough. And then the very next week, and I'd never seen the woman before, because when I go to the market, I go straight to the fruit and vegetables and I don't even look at the tables where they're selling other animal products. Now, she sells eggs at her market. That's what she was doing there. I didn't know this. She was a seller at the market. And the reason she came up at the end is because she'd already packed up her stall. We ended up staying there an extra half an hour because everybody else had gone, but we kept talking. We kept talking to this woman and another person came up, and that often happens to us. We're sometimes the last to leave because the people just can't leave the conversation sometimes. Like, some people will just leave and say, oh, right, I can't take this anymore. But other people, because it's fascinating and they've never thought about it before, and they're like, wow, this is actually stuff that's I've never thought about before, they keep asking more and more questions, and we keep giving more and more answers because we've done it for long enough that we have answers and we are used to the comments, and we can talk about them, and we're not stumped as much as I was in the beginning, where I was scrambling, and, you know, when I was first starting out at the street stall, and I was trying to think, gosh, I've never, like, gosh, what am I going to say, you know? So the more you do it, the more enjoyable it is, and the more productive it is, and the better you get at it. Of course, it makes perfect sense. So yeah, it was just interesting, that dynamic. So there you go, there's an example, because I know if I was online, we would have just, because you don't have the body language, and you have the whole sentence in which you can't, there's no dynamic. So I don't like interruption, and I am terrible at interrupting people, and I think I need to be slapped on the wrist about that a lot, because I just, I know it's rude, and it's a compulsive thing about my personality. It's a defect that I interrupt people a lot, and I don't like to do that. But we, you know, there's sometimes where you kind of interrupt each other, because, like, the good thing about face-to-face is, like, online, if I say a sentence in my comment that they completely misconstrue, their entire next comment is going to be about that sentence. Whereas face-to-face, they might interrupt me, not rudely, but say, what, you know, and then we can clarify in that moment and resolve it. And then we can go on, and then it's resolved. It doesn't fester. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that was a prime example of what I'm talking about when I say, you know, you need to get offline every now and then and get out and do something formalized. Like, don't just walk around, you know, people will come up to you with the expectation that you are going to advocate to them. That's why you're there. They know that's why you're there. That's what they're expecting. So the platform is set. The dynamic is set, and it's the perfect place to do it. Otherwise, people all over the world for centuries wouldn't have done it, would they? This is what we've done as a community for rights and for issues for centuries and centuries. It's just recently that we've had the internet, that's all. But I'm not saying we've never had written publication, but anyway, I won't belabor the point, you know what I'm saying. So that was a good example. Another thing I wanted to talk about that actually happened on that same day is what I really struggle with personally, and maybe other people don't, but I can have a productive conversation with someone who is completely speciesist and morally schizophrenic, and I can engage with that and I can address it. I have a real, you know, with somebody who is objecting or somebody who's willing to debate, with somebody who is opposing my view, I can respond to that, and I'm confident doing that. I have confidence in doing that because I am confident in my position. I know that it's right. I mean, the abolitionist approach, it's infallible. It's irrefutable. But when it comes to this, these people who, like this one woman came over, and this is where, and I actually took a different tack for the first time because I just was like, I can't be bothered with this. And her view, and this is not the first time we've heard this, and this, and you will hear it a lot, is that, well, first of all, she had this view that there was the Western way of treating animals, which is very violent and wrong, and then there's the Eastern way of treating animals, which is all very spiritual and therefore justified based on the spirituality and the culture and the religion behind it or whatever. And obviously I have answers to that, and there's no problem, but the main point she was saying was that, how can I frame it? I wish I could remember exactly what she said, because it's not the first time I've heard it, and it happens online a lot too, is that if you want to, you know, that it's violent to confront immorality. No, that's my words, my phrasing. This is, how do they put it? They say, you know, when you are talking to someone about this, then you have to be very careful not to hurt their feelings, basically. Like, you can't tell them the truth if it's going to be painful to them, because then you're being violent to them, right? So, like, in other words, I was trying to tell her about dairy products, and she was finding it upsetting or didn't want to hear it, because, and therefore I was actually committing a sin, or I was being violent against her because I wanted to tell her about them, and it would have been non-violent of me to be quiet and let her, you know. And then I said, I clarified, that was the impression I got. I said, are you serious? I was like, do you know what's happening to those? I mean, I didn't say that in those words, okay, I'm more diplomatic at the store, but I said, you know, if you think about what's happening to the non-humans, the animals we're talking about, my portraying that truth, yes, it is uncomfortable for someone, but it doesn't compare. That is not violent. Telling somebody the truth is not violent. What's happening to the animals is violent. And she said, well, no, I'm not saying that you hide. So I said, I'm not going to hide the truth from someone because of some supposed mystical karma. Like, I have to, that person has to have their equilibrium intact. Otherwise, I'm this violent person or something. She said, no, I'm not saying you can't tell them the truth, but it's the way that you do it. And I said, yeah, I understand the way, but here's one of those big things. People go on about the way you do it. What they really mean is what you're doing. So in other words, it's not the way that I'm doing it. It's, she wanted me to say that, yeah, there is better ways to treat the cows. And then, so this is what, I just have a really hard time dealing with people who take this position, this sort of like spiritual, like, oh, well, no, you have to be nice to each other all the time. In other words, you're not allowed to tell each other hard truths because then you're spiritually upsetting that person's spirituality and you're being violent to them. Meanwhile, there are billions of animals being literally suffering violence. Do you know what I mean? And it's not the first time. I'm not explaining it very well, but it's a really tough one. I just look at these people and I'm like, that is the most speciesist thing I've ever heard, ever. So we kept going, and then we started talking about milk, and I just, because she was eating dairy and she was a vegetarian, and I said, well, why are you a vegetarian? Oh, because I don't want to hurt animals. And I said, well, do you know about dairy products? And then that's when she got into her whole, once we started exploring that a little bit, all of a sudden she was like, well, you know, there's, you can't be violent, and, you know, don't upset my, you know, whatever. And so we moved past that eventually, but I was kind of deflated at this point because I was like, I can't, this person is the most speciesist person in the world, okay, which is an exaggeration, but I was just like, I can't be bothered with people like this, it's just so selfish. So I, then we finally moved past it and we started talking about milk. And we started talking about the mothers and the babies, and then she went, and now of course she embraces the Hare Krishna, and that is another one that just does my head in. The Hare Krishna, yes, they have a lot of vegan food, yes, they have a lot of people who don't eat meat, but the damage they do with their happy milk production is incalculable. It is the most frustrating thing. This is what happy meat movement and happy exploitation does. I'm going to talk more about this. You know, this is why we are so intolerant of it and so outspoken against it. The damage is immense and people don't see it. They don't see it because of speciesism. So we talked about the Hare Krishna, and I said, listen, first of all, we don't focus on treatment, but I'm telling you that you cannot have milk without a baby. So what happens to all the babies? Well, the Hare Krishna, I know, they told me they treat the babies well, and then they get to keep all the babies, and then they don't separate the babies. And I said, every single calf born. And she said, so the conversation finally ended with her saying, I'm going to go talk to them about how they treat their cows, and I'm going to investigate this. And she was great. She said, thank you very much for this information. I am going to explore it further. And I just kept saying to her, please remember that it's not the treatment. I'm sure they treat them nicer than an industrial exploiter or somebody who owns a factory farm or whatever you want to call it, but that's not the point. I said, you know, please remember that. And she wasn't hearing it. But what I want to say is, like, what was interesting is usually I tackle every conversation with gusto when I'm at the stall. I'm very passionate. I'm very involved. I'm very engaged. I'm extremely passionate. Okay. But when I encountered yet again this sort of mystical, like, you must be kind to people and you have to protect them and not be mean to them because by telling them things that are going to upset them, I actually deflated. And by the end of it, she was doing all the talking and I was kind of just had my chin on my hands and I was just like going, mm-hmm. And I was looking at her and I was feeling very sad because I thought, I didn't know how to get through to her. It was strange. And I think she sensed it. So then she became galvanized and she wanted me to engage and she wanted to defend herself in a different way than if I had reacted passionately to what she said. Because I reacted passionately in the beginning and then she was just like, oh no, my spirit or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So by the end, it was almost like an unintentional reverse psychology that I did. And I just thought, you know, I just kind of gave up on her, which I know I'm not advocating doing that, but it was a weird bit. I was still talking with her, but I wasn't passionate anymore because I thought, you are so speciesist about this, and I don't know what to do about that. It's much easier for me to talk to someone who doesn't try to say that I have no right to tell them this. That is really, for me, that's just... But she was, I'm not saying she's a bad person, she was lovely and very kind and, you know, obviously very sensitive, and that's fine, you can be sensitive, but that really gets to me. It's not the first time and I just struggle with that one. I really do, and maybe I need more practice at it, so maybe the universe will provide me more opportunities. But there was interesting dynamic at the end. Have you ever been in a situation like that where someone's kind of deflated on you and you actually feel like, oh no, I want to animate them again. I've deflated them. So that's kind of what happened. But I just said to her, listen, just remember, it's not about the treatment. And anyway, it's still bad. If you take away the other stuff and you just take that alone, what's happening to these cows alone, if you didn't have all this other stuff to compare it to, like the blatant, the beatings on the heads with crowbars and things, if you didn't have that stuff to compare it to and you just take it for itself, what do you think about what these people are doing to these cows? Do it that way. And actually there was a really great comment on, I was just online today, and somebody had left a comment on Abolitionist Approach Facebook page saying, if you want to say something is humane, imagine it being done to you. And it's just so profound. It's so true. Like, I wish I could find that because he just said it and it was really, really well done. He said it differently than me. I'm really bad at paraphrasing and I wish I had a photographic memory because my podcast would be way more coherent for one thing. Okay, so there you go. So those are some interesting dynamics that I thought were interesting to share. So the flippin' humane welfarist happy meat movement is insidious and damaging and it's going strong, so just don't underestimate its effect. And the same thing happened. Okay, so another thing that I wanted to talk about, because is again this happy meat stuff, and I've already talked about this, but we were at Eco West, we were at Eco Day, and Safe were there, and they were on the other side of the parking lot from us, but facing us, and I didn't have any idea what they were doing. I think they were probably getting petitions signed and asking for donations and the usual. But there was, the argument that they're doing any good, that they're doing good because people will say with a straight face that, this is vegans now who support Safe, will say, well, if I had been told about veganism in the beginning instead of cage-free eggs, I would have just said forget it and walk away and I would have never have become vegan. Well, I'm sorry, that I believe that they're just drinking the Kool-Aid there. Where are you getting that idea from? What is going through your mind when you're saying that about yourself? I mean, let's just think about what they're actually saying for a second. They're saying that if they had heard... Now, one of the things that those people actually mistakenly do is they assume that when we're talking about veganism, we're talking about that they're saying they think that we don't actually know how to engage with people who are resistant to the idea of veganism. When in actual fact, that is pretty much all we do all day, because people are resistant naturally because it challenges their everyday living, and it makes them have to face up to some hard truths. So in the beginning, a lot of people are resistant. One of the beautiful things that's happening nowadays is that people are genuinely wanting to go vegan. They come running over to us and say, I want to go vegan. But a lot of the times you're going to deal with the plant question. You're going to deal with the, what about the happy eggs in the backyard question? You're going to deal with, well, we always have used animals. And what about protein? I need protein. I'm a bodybuilder. You know, this is resistance. This is a resistance, but it's not an unstoppable resistance. It's just a natural thing that people are going to do because their brains are engaging, and this is just the way people are, and we deal with it all the time. So that statement, it just blows my mind, and it's not the first time I've heard it. I hear it all the time. You know, like, the only reason I'm vegan now is because I heard about happy eggs. If I had heard about veganism back when I heard about happy eggs, I would never have become vegan. I mean, do I have to break that down for people about how absurd that is, or can we just let it go there? Especially, you know, if all the vegans in the world advocated veganism and the moral personhood of animals instead of the happy meat garbage, these people would constantly hear about veganism, and they might go and think about humane and stuff on their own, because unfortunately that might be their first decision when they start waking up to the fact that these animals are living beings and they're sentient and they can feel pain. But we won't be promoting that. But to say that, you know, you would just, I just think that's just outrageous. I just think it's an outrageous thing to say. I didn't want to go into it. I've talked about it before, and I talk about it online all the time, and, you know, yeah, when we talk about vegan advocacy, it's about engaging with people and dealing with that. It's not about saying, go vegan, and then they say, well, I'm not going to go vegan, and then we say, okay, goodbye, leave, we're done with you, you're useless, which is what these people seem to think we do. So anyway, I went, I'm going to get upset if I even talk about that, it's ridiculous. There is no place for Safe and these happy meat promoters. What they're doing is wrong. It's hurting animals. It's making people feel better about consuming animals. It's making people focus on treatment. It's making people not focus on animal use and abolition. How is that helping? It is not helping. And this defeatism and this total speciesism in it. Okay, sorry. All right. Let's go back to another community advocacy that I did a long time ago, but I had just, you know, I carry these things around with me when I have experiences, and then they come back to me, and then I find out things that I wish I had said a long time ago, and now I'm ready to say them. But so we were at this other event. This was last year in February. Was it last year? Yeah. And it was called Animal Awareness Day, and it was because it was an animal event, as opposed to like Jam on Toast, which was just a community event, and as opposed to Eco Day, which was, again, not an animal event. So the animal welfarists weren't running the event. They weren't, do you know what I mean? It wasn't their event. I will never go to another animal event because, yeah, lots of reasons. But unless it's an abolitionist one, of course. So we're at Animal Awareness Day. Now, the good thing about Animal Awareness Day that I am happy to have been part of is there's lots of stuff about adoption and fostering. It was really, in fact, they were probably the main people who ran it. It wasn't actually the welfarist vegans who were running Animal Awareness Day. It was actually rescue groups, and that was really cool. But the welfarists were there in droves. I do support that. Obviously a good cause. Adoption and fostering is extremely important, saves lives instantly. But but all of the animal, you know, was safe, was there, and they had someone in a chicken suit walking around who wasn't vegan, I think I've talked about this, telling people about battery eggs or whatever. But one of the things is there was that really got to me. Now, who was I there with? I was there with Bubs, and he was talking to this woman who came over to our stall, and I had to bite my tongue. So there is a group who rescues hens. They save their lives. These are hens who have been rescued, who are either on their way to slaughter or, yeah, basically they were spent and then they were going to be slaughtered, and people are saying adopt them. And what they're doing is promoting them to people as egg layers. You can rescue these hens and you'll have, you know, humane eggs forever. You never have to buy battery eggs again, and you can have these hens' eggs and you can rescue them at the same time. So obviously I don't support that. I am not stupid though. I know why they think it's a good thing. They're telling themselves, number one, these rescued hens will have a home and they won't be slaughtered. And number two, instead of going to the supermarket and buying into the industrial egg industry and fueling that industry, these people will just eat the eggs from their rescued hens. Rescue in quote. It's not much of a rescue. I mean, it is, but it's not. And therefore, they will be removing themselves from the actual business of buying, you know, commercial eggs, etc. I understand that that is what these people are saying, and they're weighing up the lesser of two evils, and they're saying we're going to promote the lesser evil. When I say, just promote the good. So their argument was, you know, and this is where they think they've got you, is like, well, would you rather these people didn't rescue these hens at all? I mean, these people aren't vegan. They might not go vegan. So we have to find these hens a home. So this is the best way to find these hens a home. And so we have to do it this way because it's all about finding these hens a safe home. We've got all these hens. They need homes. This is the most sort of efficient way of doing it, is to promote them as egg layers. That's basically their argument. You know, if we tell everyone you shouldn't eat the hens' eggs and that they should go vegan, they won't adopt these hens and they'll go back to buying battery eggs and these hens will be homeless and then nothing good will happen at all. And I ask myself, you know, apart from all the usual arguments about how you're promoting the idea that non-human animals, in this case hens, are commodities, that their body secretions and parts, etc., are commodities for us to use, and that they are our property, you are reinforcing that. That is a very bad thing to do in the grand scheme of things. It makes things worse for all animals in the grand scheme of things. It keeps us stagnating or moving backwards in terms of animal rights, etc., etc. All of those arguments stand here. But that's not even the argument I'm going to pose today. And if I ever meet these people again, I finally am going to be able to, because my question to them is, how evil and horrible do you think these people are that you're offering to, that you're asking to adopt these hens? This is, again, that same sort of twisted thinking of like, well, I'm vegan now, but if I was talked about veganism then, I would never have gone vegan. I would have said, to hell with that, it's a lot of rubbish. And I would just, I mean, what would you have done? I'm curious to know what you think you would have done. Especially since you can't avoid being exposed to it again and again because it's growing now. Veganism is growing. And also it's the way that you're exposed to it, which they get confused because they don't know how to do vegan advocacy. They only know how to do welfarist advocacy. So my question to these people who rescue the hens is like, are you seriously telling me that you would say to this person, I'm vegan, these hens are rescued, I object to animal use. I would, you know, our goal is for these hens to have a forever home and to never be exploited again, and for people to stop reinforcing this idea, and that we don't recommend that you eat the eggs. In fact, we ask you not to eat the hens' eggs. We ask you to respect these animals as they are, and da 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 da. And then that person might still say, well, I'm going to eat the eggs. They might still say, I don't agree, I'm not going to go vegan or whatever. Now, I'm not saying that you should turn around and say, what I'm trying to say is that it seems really strange, twisted thinking, and sort of quite, like, what kind of monsters do you think these people really are, that when confronted with that argument by people who are vegan, who are rescuing these animals, who've actually rescued them and saved their lives, they've done that instead of going out to dinner or going out and having a party, instead of like going and getting their nails done, they have rescued, you know what I'm saying? Like, they've used their free time, their spare time to save lives. They're very dedicated to that. These people are telling you, and, you know, it shouldn't come as any surprise then to the people on the other end that they object to animal use and that they want these hens to have a forever home. They're worried they're going to be used as commodities. These are things that ought to be discussed with the people about how we're not selling them to you because we want you to use them as commodities, but when in fact they're doing the opposite. So are they telling me that they can have this conversation with those people and say the whole point of us rescuing these hens is to save their lives and to free them from a life of commodification, and educating themselves maybe first, but also the other people about how rescued hens are depleted and they need the nutrients, and that what you really need to do with all the eggs they lay is feed them back to them in their feed. You can boil them up and put them in their chicken food, or you can break the shells for them and they'll eat them raw. If they don't do that, then you can put them in the food and they'll definitely eat them in the food then. Like, if you boil them up and put them with the oatmeal and other things that they eat, they'll eat them. And you can have this conversation with that person. And are they saying that person's going to turn around and say, well, I'm not adopting these hens, I'm going to leave these hens to be homeless, and I'm just going to go back to paying for hens for eggs in the supermarket? Do they really think that that's what people are going to do? I mean, have they tried it and people have done that? That's what I'd like to know. Have they actually tried to have conversations with people instead of saying, here, you can have all the free eggs you want? And instead of saying that, saying to people, you know, we're vegan, we have saved these hens' lives, we're trying to end animal use, and we're trying to find homes for these hens. Yes, they are going to lay eggs. That's not why we're wanting you to have them. We want you to help save their lives. They need homes and they need those eggs themselves because of the nutrients and la, la, la. Now, if that person takes the hens home and still eats their eggs, there's nothing you can do about it. But at the very least, you have advocated to them that they're persons, that the eggs don't belong to them, that they need forever homes, that they need homes despite the fact that they lay eggs, not because of the fact that they lay eggs. These animals need homes because they are homeless refugees of an industry of torture and misery in which they were destined for the slaughterhouse. That's why they need homes. They don't need homes because they give free eggs. So I'm just saying that don't underestimate people. Have the conversations with people. I highly doubt that these people are going to turn around and say, well, I'm not going to rescue them. I mean, these people who are coming over because they do also advocate that they're rescued hens and they need homes, and that's all very, you know, emotional because these animals are just dejected looking and they're just devastated. I mean, their feathers are missing and some of them are just, it's just, they're just such a sight, like such a, they've just been through so much horror. So these are people who are coming over. The people who don't care aren't rescuing them because they can't be bothered. They'd rather just go and pay for the supermarket, because anybody who takes on any animals responsibly knows that you have to provide shelter, you have to provide food, and you have to provide veterinary care. So it's not necessarily exactly free to rescue hens and or to just take hens and put them in your backyard and take the eggs, because you have to protect them, especially if you're in an urban or any environment. You have to protect them from dogs and cats, so you have to build shelter for them. That costs money. If they get ill, hopefully you will take them to the vet and take care of them. It just depends on how you view them. The woman that I talked to, who's an industrial farmer, when a hen gets ill, the hen gets killed. There's no money in taking a hen to a vet when they're just so such commodities that you can just get another one for even cheaper. So this is all I'm saying is have those conversations with people. Don't underestimate people, and do it in a way in which you can, you know, I mean, you can make it really clear to them the terrible situation that we're all in, this horrible situation. You want them to give this animal a home. You are advocating first and foremost for this rescued hen to have a home. That is your first and foremost advocacy. It shouldn't be eggs. And talk to them about the truth about how you don't think animals should be used for the eggs, unless, of course, all of these so-called vegans who are giving these hens away do actually think that's okay. And maybe they take the eggs themselves. I don't know. In which case, there you go. But let's say they don't. Let's say they just feel that they're so desperate. They're so desperately wanting homes for these animals that they'll do anything. They'll compromise. They'll say it's okay because they're going to be safe. They're having their eggs taken, but that's no big deal. They're not being hurt. They're going to be safe. The people are going to take care of them because they want the eggs. Like I said, I understand all that, but I think that that you need to be not compromising the moral issue ever. You can do it without that. Peaceful Prairie, from what I understand, are very clear that they won't adopt any animals to people who are going to use them as commodities. And so they will tell a person, you're not to use these hens for their eggs. You're not to do that. That is not why we are one. That is not what is going to happen to this animal. You are going to take care of this animal and then you're not going to take their eggs. This is what I believe. And if the person says, well, I'm going to take their eggs, and they're saying, but you're not going to get the hens. I do believe that that is something that I've seen them say, and that is something that they stick by. That is called being uncompromising. They still provide for the hens themselves. So maybe these other people say, well, we just can't do that and we just really need homes for these hens. But you can still have that conversation with the person and say, we do not want you to take these hens' eggs. That is not what they're for. And you know what I'm saying? Is that clear? And again, I'm not in the business of trying to talk about things that I have no knowledge of. It's not that I have no knowledge of it. I understand the dynamics and I understand the realities that these animals need homes, but I don't agree that you can market them as commodities, or that you have to market them as commodities the way that they are in order to give them homes. I don't agree with that. And I think it's way better to have a conversation with someone and be very clear and let them know you do not want them to use these animals as commodities. You do not want that. In fact, they should go vegan, right? They wouldn't even worry about eating the eggs. I mean, if I had rescued animals, I would not be eating the eggs or using their wool, okay? Because I'm vegan. But, you know, these people who are rescuing the hens, a lot of them are doing it because they want their free eggs, all right? And this is being touted and promoted, and the justification that has been given is that they need homes and this is better than them not having homes, or it's, you know, and all that. And like I said, I hope I already addressed that. I just think, don't underestimate people. But if you don't even have that conversation at all, and you don't challenge them on the property status, and you keep them entrenched in the lies that animals are commodities, and that as long as you treat them humanely, it's all okay, but killing them isn't a problem, then you will have someone who'll take the animals home, use them for hens, and then maybe when the hens stop producing, maybe they'll take them to the vet to be killed, or maybe they won't. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know how that works. I don't know anybody who's got backyard hens and who uses them for their eggs, apart from, you know, so-called vegans and sanctuaries who do that, which is not, yeah. But I think we need to be having these conversations with people and not being too scared to have them, you know? And I would guarantee that 9 out of 10 people who you have that conversation with are still going to offer to rescue the hens and give them a home, and you've given them something to think about, and you've drummed into them that this is not a commodity and that this is not the purpose of saving these animals, and that in fact they should be vegan. And I think that, I don't think they're all going to walk away from you. You know, the reason they came to you is because they wanted to do something that they thought was good. Well, give them the full picture of what the actually being good means, what the actual action of good means. Give them that. Don't be scared. And they're not even going close to that. They are promoting the fact that these hens lay eggs. This is what was happening with this rescue group at Animal Awareness Day anyway. That's what they were doing. So even apart from the obvious of reinforcing the property status, it's like these people are coming to you, you know, they're already, you know, everybody talks about baby steps, baby steps. Well, these people are already trying to take steps. I mean, they're not just saying, well, I'm just going to go to the supermarket and I don't care about hens. They're saying, oh, well, you know, I have some empathy. I have some heart. I want to help these hens. But at the same time, I want to get some free eggs. And then you can address that. You know what I'm saying? Really? I mean, I really think. And you need to learn how to do it effectively. Okay? And I'm not sitting here saying I'm going to rescue, you know, I'm not sitting here saying I'm going to provide homes for all those hens. I'm not saying that. I can't do that. Okay, I admit that. But I'm certainly not going to promote the idea of eating their eggs to anyone either. I think you can give people a little credit and tell them the truth. You can't control what they do when they go home. You can't. Again, like I said, Peaceful Prairie wouldn't even let them take them home if they indicated they were going to use the eggs. And I admire that. Boy, that was something that I just sort of thought of. I hope I made sense in talking about how, like, I think that we're underestimating people too much. And the way we're underestimating them is the easiest thing in the world to do is to just keep compromising the non-humans. That is the easiest thing in the world to do. It's the default position that is just constantly utilized, and it's utilized out of fear and speciesism, a combination of both. Okay, what else was I going to talk about today? I think that was it. I just had this thought about the Animal Awareness Day situation a few days ago, so I thought, oh, I need to do a podcast about it. And then these other things happened, which I really want to talk about, the street stall as well, because I really want people to get out there and do it, you know. It's just, once you start, you realize how rewarding it is in terms of the different dynamics. It's very valuable. Okay, and no petitions and no welfareism and no single issue. Don't need any of that rubbish. There was a thread that I was going to talk about that was on the Abolitionist Approach website that was a prime example of the effect of the Happy Meat movement and how damaging and detrimental it is. So, I mean, but there's so many examples of that. But let me just quickly find that one. It was about Whole Foods, and they have got these cage-free eggs. The entire thread, so basically it was Gary Francione has this photo somebody had sent to him, probably from Whole Foods, which is a big organic supermarket in America, and they have an animal welfare rating of like 1 to 5. They say this animal is an animal rating of 5, you know, it's really high welfare and all these kinds of just terrible things. So this particular type of egg has pasture raised written on it in big letters, and it says, girls on grass, free to forage, ! And somebody pointed out that the illustration is very cartoonish and the writing is very reminiscent of child's cartoons, and that's very, very true. It's appealing to that, like, child's, this is the way that they peddle animal exploitation to children, is with the same kind of, it's big, bright, sort of roundy, big, round, soft block letters with white border, all sort of cartoonish, and girls on grass. And the prime example is that the vast majority of people on the thread were seriously saying, well, what's the matter with these eggs? I mean, this is great. You know, isn't it great? And so it was just an example of how many people just are sucked in by this terrible, terrible situation of a happy meat, and it's really, really bad news. I say happy meat, even though I berate myself for saying meat all the time, but it's happy meat is a euphemism for this humane exploitation movement. And it includes all animal products. And it's all about animals used for food. There's no happy leather campaigns, although I bet you they would if they could. Happy wool and happy happy everything else, but it's all a lie, and it's just hurting the animals, and we need to just be clear. We want to abolish animal use, and you can do that. So please, please don't buy into, don't drink the welfarist Kool-Aid. It's poison. All right, I think I've spoken enough and I feel better. I hope I made some sense. And, you know, we're off to... So it's now raining. The weather took a huge turn for the worse. Eco Day was a pretty good day, and then it's just been raining. But also, I'm doing like a course. I'm doing a course in adult literacy. I want to teach adults how to read. It's like a dream of mine. I want to be able to do it for a living. But in the beginning, it's all voluntary. So I'm going to be busy doing some courses on the weekends, and then I have to do 50 hours of tutoring, because that way I can pay for the course. Otherwise, I would have to pay for the course, and I can't really afford to. So it's kind of a good deal, but that's a lot of tutoring, 50 hours, especially if I can only do it on the weekends and evenings, which I can't because I work. But anyway, wish me luck. But anyway, so I don't know, like, I'm kind of bummed this time of year. I don't like the cold, I don't like winter, and I don't like not being able to do my street stall when I want, and I hate always having to be anxious about rain. It's so nerve-wracking. That's the one thing I will admit about doing a street stall. If you don't have a tent, we don't put up a tent on Queen Street. I don't want to, because I think they'll start to tell us to leave if we put up a tent, and I don't want, we've been there happily for 5 years and nobody's bothered us, and I don't want to be in a situation where we're getting hassled by the council and we have to get more, you know, I just don't want to be in that situation. So we don't have a tent on Queen Street, and so the weather is so nerve-wracking. It's like, is it going to rain? Because there's nothing worse for me than getting there, setting up everything, and everything's beautiful, and then it rains. And then, you know, it's all paper, and then you're just like, and then you protect it, and then it stops raining, and then you're like, oh, maybe it's okay, and then it's like, rains again, or like, you're in the morning, you're like, it looks like it's going to rain, I think it's going to rain, and then you don't go, and then it doesn't rain. It's just like, that's the only thing, okay, that is the nerve-wracking thing. That, for me, is just so nerve-wracking all the time. I just get high anxiety about it. I need to just relax. The thing is, I really want to do it, but there's nothing worse than being rained out. And then having all your paper get wet. And then, I mean, I do have contingencies for the paper, but it's just frustrating. And then usually what happens is I go home and then it stops raining. But if I stay, it keeps raining. It's called Catch 22. No, it's called Murphy's Law. But no, that's not true. But that's the only thing. So the street stall situation is, again, and we're coming in, we're in autumn, but we will be doing it. There will be street stalls happening, okay? We will make it happen. And there are some beautiful, clear, sunny winter days, and those are gorgeous. It's just the uncertainty that gets me about the rain. And there's not a heck of a lot of festivals over the... In fact, I don't know any over the winter. There are markets where you can have an indoor stall, but Davenport Market, I'm not going to do, because they suddenly hit me with the fact that I have to have a license, and I have to get a food license in order to give away my free cupcakes, and I need to do them in a commercial kitchen, and it costs hundreds of dollars, and I have to, it's just ridiculous. And then the stall itself costs $40 anyway, but it is inside. But it was never that. The first time I did the Davenport stall, it was fantastic, and it was I got to use this amazing tent. It was brilliant, but it's never been that good since I've done it, so I haven't been doing that. So it's generally the street stall is what we're going to be doing. But of course, as I always say, we want to do more stuff. Like, we want to do stuff that's a little different, like have it a night where we show. I really want to show, as I've said from the beginning of my podcast, Gary Francione's videos, especially Introduction to Animal Rights. It's a slideshow. Maybe it's totally subjective, because that slideshow had such a profound effect on me. That hammered it home. That made me get it. I got it. That slideshow was like 100% made me an abolitionist. Like, that was just it. I was like, I get it. I totally get it. And then there's the other ones, there's animal, the theory of animal rights and stuff like that. So it's good for both vegans and non-vegans to come to those things. I mean, sadly, we are still spending so much time trying to get vegans, you know, to promote veganism. It's still a big deal. But I want to do events like that. But those are a little different, because on the street stall, we're there in the middle of everybody and they walk past. An event, you need to make people come. They have to actually come to the event, and you have to get them to put aside the time, make a plan and come. And I'm not confident enough in organizing that yet. And so we haven't made anything like that happen. But even though it's frustratingly slowly, we are getting things going here. And, you know, at the very least, doing our stall is fantastic, but I'd love to have another type of event. And I would love to have readings of Gary Francione's books, reading groups, local ones where you get together and you talk about it. That's another thing where you have to get people to commit. I'm not very good also, I'm paranoid because I have, because I got off to such a bad start with all the vegans in New Zealand, I don't feel very, I'm certainly not part of the vegan community in New Zealand, because they're all welfareists, most of them, all the ones I know, apart from the, you know, the four or five people that have, in Auckland that I know have done the stall. So, I would love it if all the vegans in New Zealand were abolitionists. Can you imagine? Oh, what a beautiful thought. All the vegans in the world. Anyway, enough daydreaming, back to reality. Okay, everybody, have a great week, and I'll do my podcast again soon, I'm sure, and thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back.